Session number 21129, real two.
And the idea was for, if the parachutists were dropped in England, you know, German parachuting, we would have a quick response to go and encircle them. Of course, it was a full regiment who was supplied with beaverettes. Because we'd only lay towns fire. We didn't have any, because we knew they wouldn't have, you know, big vehicles. They knew they wouldn't have big vehicles to contend with. From Rendlesham, we moved up north and started supplying us with tanks. I think there were big tanks. I think they called them Covenanters. There were big wheel tanks with tracks on. And I was still in Bierschelung in there. And we moved up to a place, again Oxford. I forgot the name now. It'll come back to me, maybe. And from there was landing tanks and doing manoeuvres and all such as that. Because it made our regiment one of them for the invasion. Brackley, that's where the place we were, Brackley, where we moved up into there. From there we went all over different parts of the country, and right on gunnery ranges and tank ranges. In the meantime, when we'd been trained so much, there came an order to the, you know, regimental command, recruiting for the desert campaign. Well, I was picked out. In the meantime, I'd been passed on tank driving. I'd been passed about a week on tank driving. And the all that came to be on the, to go to the desert, Montgomery's recruitment, they put all the names in the hat, and they drew the hat, so many that had to be drawn out, so there was no favouritism or anything. I was drawn out, and next day we all had to go to brigade headquarters. The brigade headquarters, the brigadier came to, and he spoke to everybody. He said to me, how long have you been driving tanks? I said, I passed out a week ago on the driving course. And he said, only a week ago? I said, yes. And, one of them said, yes, that's correct, to him, to the brigadier. When I got back, got back to the regiment, they said to me, you're off this draft. I said, what for? He says, because you haven't had enough experience for driving tanks. So in the meantime, I said, well, who's taking my breath? He said, George Chambers. Because George Chambers wanted to change with me. He was a tank driver. I said, well, it's my lot to be drawn out of the hat. Like, I'll take my chance. Anyway, of course, I was taken off the draft. George Chambers went in. A week after I got to Egypt, he was taken prisoner.
Sorry, your motorbike.
After that, of course, we went up to Scotland. We were in Scotland on the big tank range against Trone in Scotland. I was very, very out to seeing that. One night when we was there, I was on guard with, I was still a trooper. I was on guard with so many in this tent, in, guarding the tanks on the tank range. Next morning, the one who should have been on guard was in the tent with us. Of course, the corporal, he was a bit mad about him. He said, look outside. We couldn't get outside because the snow was that high up the tent. He'd come into shelter. So they were, when he found out that things weren't so serious, he said, after that, we moved down. Oh, we moved to a place called Brackley, in, up again in Bradford. I don't know if you know it or not. Brackley, again Bradford. I was there a winter. From there, we moved down south again to Canada Camp. Again, Newmarket. They were doing all kinds of training at Canada Camp. And one of them was, they drop you off 10 miles from the camp, out of three tunnels that had been tied down, and you have to find your way back as a team, because you, we was one troop. I was in a tank unit then. I was in a one troop. And we had to find our way back, which we did eventually, when we found our bearings and that. That was one of the exercises. Of course, there's the eighth around Newmarket and that. They used to drop you off anywhere. Canada Camp, and eventually, oh, while I was there, I was on a big scheme, I ran out of petrol. I didn't know, I thought it was the pump. The mechanics came and mended the pump. I went on a few miles and it went, you know, I ran out of petrol again. Of course, I put on a charge and said it was serious. But I knew what had gone wrong later. I found out they didn't charge me. They just had to sweep the camping area up. That was all.
What was wrong with it?
I'm just going to tell you. I found out later my tank was that the night previous to this scheme. I never let on, but I found out what the reason. My tank had been siphoned off for a farmer. I found this out later, but I never complained about it because the incident, I got a good idea how the chap was that had helped the farmer to siphon it off. And I got him into trouble as well, because the incident was close. But I wasn't really charged. I didn't go on a charge. All I did was, they told me, you know, sweep up around the camping area. From there, we went to an area. Can't call it no name. It's in a boat there. We went into an area. This was just before D-Day. you know, getting ready for the day. And we had to waterproof all the tanks, and that was from dawn till dusk, waterproofing the tank. Oh, before then, we was at Fritton Lake, learning to drive D-Day tanks. There was Valentine's, there was floating tanks, with a screen was learning to land in D-Day tanks. And also, we're learning to use Davis submarine escape apparatus that was in the big swimming vats at Yarmouth. The big one. We got quite proficient at that. We used to, like they're using diving equipment now, we used to use the to swim underwater and, you know, use them like they do now in the bus. Quite an experience was that. Anyway, somebody, the engineers built a great big concrete tank sunk into the ground, and there was just a fighting compartment of an old tank and the diving compartment of the Valentine's. There was at the bottom of the tank. We were all in overalls that we used to wear, you know, for doing tank maintenance and that, instead of the uniform, the overalls. We was all in them, and the crew we used to, your crew, the member of, got into the tank at the bottom of this pit. It must have been about 18, 20 feet deep. Great big tank. And two big 16-inch water pipes from a tower came into the tank. When you got into the tank, you had your Davis escape apparatus on your chest and a nose clip handy. Then you open these two 16-inch tank water tubes, and you filled it up in 2 or 3 seconds, this big tank. Of course, you would swill them out at the bottom, simulating a tank sinking on the invasion. And you had somebody in the escape operator was able to get to the surface. And of course, by the time you got your clip on your nose and that, and air into your bag on your chest, you were floating up to the top. And that was your training for to get out of a tank. Which tank from we landed, went into on the invasion was Sherman tanks. Dead dual drive Sherman tank. Dual drive means tracks and propeller. And the drive had a lever in the front. You could engage the propeller and or disengage it. Of course, from there, was lagered up for a week or 10 days before we moved down. Oh, we went on a training from Gosport on the Isles at Gosport. I went on a training one night. I was right out onto the channel, and they must have thought it was invasion, and we turned back, and we came and we did a simulated landing in England, and there was infantry from other regiments trying to oppose a landing and that, you know, simulated landing. That was a serious one because we thought it was, the, you know, what was going on the invasion. Anyhow, I forget how long it was after that. We did the real invasion and went down to Gosport. and went off the yard onto Gosport, LTC, and was anchored off of Gosport in between the Isle of Wight in England, in the channel there. Of course, we didn't know when it was going, but it should have been June the 6th, was it?
Yes.
Anyhow, it was too rough to go that day, so they postponed it for a day, and we went the next day. We did a successful landing in France at Wistrom.
What was your crossing like?
Rough. But there was just me and another chap that wasn't, didn't affect. We wasn't seated. All the rest of them were seated, barring the Navy men. But all the rest of them, we were given the job of cooking the meal, trying to cook a meal for them, me and the other chap. Who was it? I forget his name now. Forget his name. Anyhow, successful landing, we went up, did runners right up the beach, and we run into the water and out. Because with the DD tank, he had this big skirt, canvas skirt around the tank, the floating tank, it did float, yeah. It float the tank, displacement of water. Anyway, we eventually arrived and dropped. When we got on the beach, we dropped the screen, and we were lagged up.
How deep was the water that you landed in?
Well, we didn't actually float. We was right up, nearly floated. It'd be about, I should say, maybe 10 feet. All we wanted to know was to get on, out of the water and onto solid ground.
Were you under fire as you went into the beach?
I don't know, it was under fire. Our LDC under fire. But there's a lot of firing and bombing and shooting going on. And you could hear the, when we got on the beach, you could hear the big warships blasting away. When we landed at Wistrom, I can still picture it, a big house on the coast, just off the beach. And that was all that was standing. All the other buildings was all knocked down and that. We lagged successfully through a village. And I had a motorbike, dispatcher had his motorbike on my tank, we got that out. Then we got orders we had to advance, it was getting late in the afternoon. Sea Squadron was given the task of going up, we were trying to get to Cannes. On the way to Cannes, we got stopped. And our officer, forgot his name, I can't remember names. He said to us, I was with Corporal Lutley, George Hooker, Jimmy Barton. I could never remember the gunner's name. Anyhow, we was leading tank in one troop. He said to coach with all intercom, he could hear everybody in the tank, you know, intercom, and orders from the commander. Troop commander said, you advance, corporal, to gun that air stack. Well, there was like a big bank over there, so I went over the bank to the side of the air stack. When we got there, there was a gun firing, started firing at us. And the funny thing about it, I didn't know till years after, well, was at one of the association reunions, Charlie Lovely. He said, "Did you know, Bob?" I could see them shells coming towards us. I said, "It's a funny thing, I never meant it. I thought it was something I was, alone I was seeing. I'd seen the same thing. These shells coming towards us." The second one knocked the anti-aircraft gun off the top of the tank, and Charlie got splinters in his eyes and his face, and he dropped down into the tank. Next one hit the top of the tank again, and no commander, anything, so I thought I better reverse behind this ice, like out of sight, because I couldn't do anything, there was nobody to command it. And just as I was moving, a shell came, and it came, hit the hull gun, machine gun, and Jimmy Martin was the car driver, hull machine gunner, and he knocked everything through him, and all he had was his muscle, some muscle holding him together at the, on his stomach. Anyway, after that, back over this mound, this ridge, and it came on the intercom, "Charlie, your tank's on fire." Well, Charlie was incapacitated because he was injured in his face. So I stopped the tank. I got out with a fire extinguisher, and it was the night that we had for camouflage night was on fire. Some of the sparks from the shell hit in the top of the turret had dropped on and set it on fire. So I put that out with the extinguisher. The old gunner, the projectile that had come through the front, had ploughed up into the cupola ring of the tank. It turned the piece out like a big drill. And that whipped a big piece of flesh out of his cheek, of his backside. The splinter from in the tank, when it hit the top of the tank, inside the tank, it spread all the legs of the wireless operator. That was George Shoker. And he couldn't do anything. So I thought the best, I'd get to HQ. Well, it was Captain Platt, I saw. He says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I've been knocked out." I said, "The corporal, he's injured in his face." I said, "And the old gunner," I said, "he's dead." And I said, "The wireless operator is injured in his legs." And he said, "Right, can you get down to the coast and find a first aid place to see them?" I got down into getting dark then. I got down to, again, Wistrom, and there's a little orchard there. I pulled into the orchard and I backed up again a wall. I said to him, "Now, what are you doing?" Well, they stopped till next morning. We got the gunner away, and Charlie, he wasn't feeling so bad, Charlie Lothley. He wasn't feeling too bad. And anyway, next morning, we got the, that was when we got the gun away to a first aid post. Charlie said to come back and to the tank and see what we can do. Well, we got back to the tank, of course Jimmy Bart was dead. And during the night he'd been called, he'd gone to Steve. So me, who'd only young was George Joker. So I said to him, you clear off, you go and get yourself to the first aid post and see what you can get, the bits of shrapnel that had gone into his leg. And me and Charlie had to get Jimmy out of the tank. Just me and Charlie, and we had to get Jimmy out, we had to get him out twice. Because he's just out of, you know, out of the hull gunner's position, he was, and we had to sever him into the muscles with a knife. I kept this quiet for years, till last year. Charlie passed away last year, massive heart attack. But he confided with another member of the Ray Jones, what I'm just telling you now. And the reason we sent young Shoker away because we thought it would affect him. And that's how we got Jimmy. We'll reach that photo.
Right, we'll look at it later, not now.
I wanted to show you where I buried Jimmy.
We'll look at it later.
Yeah. Anyhow, me and Charlie, we buried him again in the corner of this apple orchard. After we buried him, we got Charlie away and I found out that he'd got splinters in his eye and he went back to England. Of course, I was left on my own then. The next day, the tech had
the what?
Technical had that was in charge of the repair of tanks and the tech officer, I mean. I think they called him Wright. Anyhow, he was a regimental technical officer in charge of all the mechanics. And they came to see what condition the tank was. And he brought the 13th Hussars Padre with him. Because we hadn't given him a proper burial service, Jimmy. And he wanted to know about the padre wanted to know, and conducted a little service over him. This was next day, and Charlie had come back to England because he went on the photo that was taken. Doc found this photo in Picture Post. A photo had been, it was a photographer from Picture Post obtained a photo of the little ceremony over Jimmy's grave. From there, I was running about and I found OB Echelon. So, of course, I had no food rations or anything. I had to rely on them, you know, basically, and give them a bit of food. And it was a couple of nights I went up with them to where the lager, the tanks. We'd be actually on there was supplying them with food and water and petrol. I went up the same day and one of the drivers in three troop, he dropped the lid on his finger, the driver's lid on his finger and he knocked the top of his finger off. And they wanted to drive, so I volunteered to drive, take his place in 3-2. I was with them a week or so, and in the meantime, we had to I got back with one tub, found out, you know, with three tub in there, I got back in my own tub. Was in a few skirmishes, and one particular that comes to mind, what we call Leafy Lane. And we Lieutenant Howard was down there, officer, Freddie Frow, Jack Rawlins, Morris Leslie, and Williams was in the crew. They got no doubt that we had